From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Jeannie Yandel. And this is A Guide to Visitors, live, local storytelling. We've got a special hour of ghost stories tonight, all told live on stage without notes or scripts. Julian's story takes place during his high school days here in Seattle, but it starts in Japan, where he was born. Julian originally told this story on October 13th, 2003, at the Rendezvous.
My story begins when I was a little boy, growing up in Japan. My mother is Japanese and my dad is American, and I was born in Yokohama and grew up there until I was 10 years old. In the mid-1960s, when my parents met, my dad was a seaman in the Merchant Marines, and my mom was a single mom raising a two-year-old boy, my older brother Paul, whom she had with a previous relationship with another American man. My parents dated for about a year, they got married, and another year later, in 1968, I was born. Growing up in Yokohama, I remember being raised by my mother, Chieko, her older sister, my aunt, Oba-chan, and my older brother, Paul. And in the family, there were aunts, uncles, extended family, family friends, neighbors. It was a lively childhood, but the one person who was conspicuously absent from my childhood was my dad. Being in the Merchant Marines, my dad was hardly ever around. He would come home every 3 or 4 months, spend a week at home, and then sail off to sea for another 4 months. So during a year, the cumulative amount of time that my dad would spend with the family added up to about a month, month and a half. Since he was hardly ever home, the times that he would spend with the family were very special and memorable to me. When my dad would come home from the Merchant Marines, he would always have gifts for us from all the exotic places he would around the world. And so every 4 or 5 months when he'd come home, it was like Christmas at our house. My dad was Santa Claus, and he'd come late at night bearing gifts. But instead of going up the chimney, he would stay for a week and then go. So as a kid, I intellectually and instinctively knew that my dad was somebody I should respect and admire. And my mom did her very best in his absence to instill that in our kids, in his kids. But my dad was never around long enough for me to really get to know him. So he became this mythical figure, and my dad, being a strapping 6'1" American guy who was much bigger and taller than all the other Japanese men around that I was used to having, so even his physical presence was awe-inspiring and it was heroic. In 1978, when I was 10 years old, my dad retired from the Merchant Marines, and he moved the family from Yokohama to Seattle, where he was originally from. He was born and raised in Seattle. It was his hope that now, since he was retired, we would become the normal nuclear family with the dad, mom, the two kids. We had a beagle, the white picket fence. But within a year of living together day in, day out, my parents realized that they didn't really like each other. They had built up a successful marriage as long as for the greater part of the year, they didn't have each other around. And for us kids, me and my brother Paul, the transition from moving to America, from Japan to America, was awkward, and maybe even difficult at times, starting new school, making new friends, but now we had this dad who was practically a stranger to us around all the time, and we didn't know how to relate to him, we didn't know how to talk to him. And also at home, me and my mom and my brother, we all spoke Japanese to each other, and my dad didn't speak a lick of Japanese, so now we were forced to speak English as just so he would be included in the conversation. Eventually, the tension between my parents reached a breaking point where they decided it was just best to call it quits and divorce. After the divorce, my mom returned to being a single mom. She got custody of the kids, got the house, and my dad moved out and moved in with this old childhood friend of his, Rhonda. Rhonda, well, not only was she a childhood friend of my dad, she was his second cousin, and the rumor from his side of the family was that when they were kids growing up together, Rhonda had an extremely huge crush on my dad, but it was unrequited, thankfully. My dad didn't feel the same way about her. He's not all into incest or anything. So when my dad left home to join the Merchant Marines, Rhonda was left heartbroken. And when my dad returned to the States with a family, with a Japanese wife and two kids, one which wasn't even his own, Rhonda was extremely jealous of my mom and took an instant disliking to the kids. She had a husband and three kids, but after the divorce, she convinced and coerced my dad into believing that he no longer had anything to do with the family. And she was very successful because even though Rhonda and my dad lived only 5 miles away from us, my dad never came to visit me, never called me, never wrote me, never sent me any birthday cards. The only thing that he would do was occasionally, every 2, 2.5, 3 months, he would drive by on his way home from work. And this would be just when I was getting off the school bus and walking home. He would slow down the car just long enough to get my attention. He would smile and wave at me and then just drive off. 1980, 81, 82, 83, the early 80s, I was 13, 14, 15, and I was entering my awkward teenage years, and I was fast becoming a punk rock, bat cave, goth kid. And bat caver, if you're not familiar with that term, is a 1980s version of a goth. And my friends would dress in black, would listen to Bauhaus, The Cure, The Smith, and dress in all black, and to quote The Smith, we wore black on the outside because we felt black on the inside. And we'd hang out at the Ab on Capitol Hill on the Broadway, and just really up to no good. And we were too cool to care about anything. So with the music that we're listening to, the black clothes, the whole f*** attitude, being a punk rocker, it really fueled my resentment and anger towards my dad. He wasn't making any effort to come see me. I mean, he was divorced. He divorced my mom, but he wasn't supposed to be estranged to me. And even though I couldn't admit it at that time, I was really hurt and angry that he wasn't making any attempt to see me, except for those lame drive-bys that he would do. And he wouldn't even stop. He would just, like, get my attention, wave, and just keep driving off. And so it was really annoying and embarrassing to me whenever he would do these drive-bys. I remember one day in September of 1983, it was the second week of September, because I had just started my sophomore year of high school. And I had just gotten off the school bus, and I was walking up the driveway, up toward the front door to my house, and I noticed that my dad was coming down the other street in his car, doing his lame drive-bys again. I'm like, oh, here it comes again. And I'm looking around, like, looking to see if my friends will notice, because I don't want my friends to know that my dad's doing this, and it's totally uncool. Well, instead of slowing down, he actually stopped the car this time, and we stared at each other for about a minute. And it was just a standoff. We just stared at each other and didn't make any moves. My dad wasn't smiling. He didn't call me over. He just stared at me, and I stared back at him. And about a minute later, I got disinterested. He wasn't making any attempt to, like, call me over, so I just turned around and started walking up towards the door again. Just before I reached the front door, I glanced back, and I saw my dad's car driving off, rounding the corner, and disappearing from view. And this episode didn't really strike me as being peculiar, except that he had stopped this time, which he had never done before. About a week later, I was sitting at home in the rec room watching TV, and my mom was in the kitchen upstairs, and all of a sudden I heard my mom start to cry. So I went upstairs to see what was wrong, and my mom was holding a letter that she had received from my grandmother, my dad's mom, and it was a letter of condolence, and apparently my dad had passed away. I remember after hearing that my dad died, I went up to my room, closed the door, just laid in bed, and I felt really numb. I couldn't feel anything for him. It felt like I had just heard that a distant uncle had died. Later that night, after my mom had calmed down, she placed a phone call to my grandma, my dad's mom, to find out what exactly had happened to my dad. And we learned that my dad had a massive heart attack. Rhonda, the woman that he was living with, decided that she didn't need to inform us because we were no longer his family. She was. My mom, on my behalf, called her lawyer because she wanted to protect my rights as my dad's heir. And so in that process, we received a copy of this death certificate. When it arrived in the mail, my mom handed it to me. It was unopened. She wanted me to be the one to open it. I opened it up, and on the death certificate, it had how he died, what happened to him, and when he died. The date of his death on the death certificate was August 29, 1983. That day when my dad drove by and stopped the car was the last time he drove by and the last time I actually saw him. It was actually 2 weeks after he had died. When I'm telling the story, I always have a beginning, a middle, and I don't necessarily have an end. it's been 20 years now, and I really don't know what it means to me, and I don't have a conclusion. And I don't really think about my dad that much, and I don't think about how he died and what happened, and how he came to visit me after he had died. Only when somebody asks me for a ghost story do I volunteer this. But whenever I do tell the story, I do think, on that day when he drove by and he stopped the car, if I had not turned around, if I had walked up to the car, what would he have said to me? That was going to be the ending to my story. But now I realize it's not really important what he had to say to me. And just to take it at face value, he probably just drove by because he just wanted to take a good long last look at his son before he drove off into proverbial sunset. That's it.
Julian Tudor is a flight attendant who lives here in Seattle. He originally told that story back in October 2003 at the Rendezvous. A Guide to Visitors is a live, local storytelling event. You can learn more about A Guide to Visitors at kuow.org. Search on the keyword storytelling. This series was edited by Jim Gates. Web content was produced by Carmen Santos. Funding for this series was provided by the KUOW Program Venture Fund. Contributors include Paul and Lori Ahern and Puget Sound Energy. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Jeannie Yandel.